Many years ago, a writer and a songwriter and a poet whom you older folk would remember, his name is Bob Dylan. The only reason I say that is because these days when I teach younger people, young adults and teenagers, people that I think that should be known by everyone, of course, are only turn out to be generational. And we are the generation, the older generation, that remembers. So for those of you who are young people who've never heard of Bob Dylan is probably one of the great lyric writers in the history of American popular music and folk music. He wrote a song that came to mind during this gospel about seeing and not seeing. Now, I'm going to read you a couple of the verses, but I think I'll just let you listen to maybe one verse. I have to warn you, for those of you who've never heard Bob Dylan, he has a horrible voice. Okay, horrible voice. And the fact that I'll play you one, just so you can see what it sounds like, the fact that I'm going to play you it through an iPhone doesn't improve the horrible voice. The whole point here is not to listen to the horrible voice or the tinny sound, but, and you don't have to catch the words because I'll read you a few of the words because it has a lot to say about today's gospel. The song is called My Back Pages. And see if you can catch. Well, let me back up a little. The basic theme of the song is repeated over and over again. And the basic theme of this song is, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now. Now, if you think about it, it's exactly backwards. It's backwards because you could say, I was so much younger then, I'm older than that now. But Dylan is actually going the opposite way. And the theme of the whole thing is how he has come to see life differently. And where I'm going to go with this, so you know, is that that's the whole point of the gospel. Jesus is asking us to see life from a different perspective. And we are sort of stuck in one perspective. And it's interesting because Jesus says later, he says, unless you become like little children, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. Notice that he's already saying, unless you become younger, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. But just listen to a little bit of it. Remember, horrible voice and tinny because it's from an iPhone.
And flames tied through my ears, rolling high and mighty traps. Pounced with fire on flaming roads, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I, proud neath heated brow. Ah, but I was so much older then, I'm younger than that now.
Okay, that's basically how it goes. But listen to, because it's sometimes not easy to make out the words. But listen to this. This is what you just heard. Crimson flames tied through my ears, rolling high and mighty traps, pounced with fire on flaming roads, using ideas as my maps. We'll meet on edges soon, said I. Proud with heated brow. But I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. Then he goes on to say, half-racked prejudice leaped forth. Rip down all hate, I screamed. Lies that life is black and white spoke from my skull, I dreamed. Romantic facts of musketeers foundationed deep somehow. I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. A self-ordained professor's tongue, too serious to fool, spouted out that liberty is just equality in school. Equality, I spoke that word as if a wedding vow. But I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. In a soldier's stance, I aimed my hand at the mongrel dogs who teach, fearing not that I become my enemy in the instant that I preach. My existence led by confusion, boats mused at mutiny from stern to bow. But I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. My guard stood hard when abstract threats, too noble to neglect, deceived me into thinking that I had something to protect. Good and bad, I defined these things quite clear, no doubt, somehow. But I was so much older then. I'm younger than that now. It has a few more verses, but that's enough. What Dylan is trying to seek to help to communicate is that his life has taken a turn. And the turn is how he sees the world. Because you see, one of the things that when you get older, you begin to understand, and you understand this at every age. Like, for example, I'm 67 years old. And now, when I used to roll my eyes at my mother, when my mother said to me, Mario, don't get old, it's not for sissies. And I used to say, yes, Mom, yes, Mom. And she would spend a long time trying to make herself look pretty. And she would say to me, because I would be very frustrated with her, and I said, Mom, hurry up! And she would say, Mario, when you're young and beautiful, you can go out and look windblown, and you look beautiful. But when you're older, you got to work a lot more. Because if I had just went out windblown, all they'd see was a tattered old woman. And she's right. And I learned, but I couldn't see it at that time. And at every stage of your life, and those of you here who are teenagers, the same thing. You will learn that the next stage that you go to, you look back and you wonder how could you have been so sure of everything? Because that's a mark of someone who is still growing up and not very mature. They're sure of everything. They're 100% sure. And that's what Dylan is saying. I was so sure. He was in the 60s and he was fighting for justice and fighting for this and fighting for that. And then he grows older. And instead of being more sure, he's actually less sure. But I was so much older than when he was a kid. I'm younger than that now. Why younger than that now? Because that's what Jesus was meaning. That when you're older, when you're young, and you begin to go out into the world, and not only young, but young comparatively, a 40, 50-year-old can be young compared to somebody who's grown old wisely. You think you know it all. And you view life, you view it through a kind of an overlay that you put on it. See, what we see is raw reality. We see raw reality. But the important thing is not the raw reality. It's how you interpret the raw reality. One of the great psychologists that I have always admired, and I've mentioned his name before, is Viktor Frankl. He was a Jewish psychiatrist who was imprisoned in a concentration camp by the Nazis. And he survived. And he saw a lot of his friends die, and literally they would curl up because the situation was so hopeless that they would just curl up and die. And he noticed that it was the men in his unit who were able to look at the reality but not be swallowed up by the suffering, because they saw that horror of the concentration camp. They saw it from another perspective. He saw it from the perspective of the love that he had for his wife. And he describes the light in his mind of the image of his wife, which he didn't even know if she was alive or dead. But instead of focusing on the reality which these men who had died had focused on, he chose to lift his eyes and see primarily the light that came through the image of his wife. And Frankl said one thing that I have never forgotten, and I always cling on to it, and it's so true. He said, the ultimate human freedom is the ability to choose the attitude or the interpretation that you will give towards your sufferings. The ultimate human freedom is the ability to choose the attitude that you will have towards your sufferings. It's interesting from this perspective. A lot of times I talk to people and they talk about coming to church. And I hear people say, I don't like to go to church. Or I can't get my kids to go to church. Or church is boring. Or all kinds of, church this and church that. And I don't know how to say this to them, but that's not the important thing. Church is important, don't get me wrong. But being a Christian is not about going to church. Being a Christian is about seeing the world from a different perspective. Going to church helps you to see the world from a different perspective. It's a help. Because as a disciple of Jesus, what you have to do is you have to get out of the bubble that culture has put you in. You see, whether you know it or not, and you don't know it until you study and you live and you get knocked around a little bit, you live in an interpretive bubble. You experience life the way that the culture tells you to experience it. Why do you think fashion is that way, is the way it is? I get a big kick out of harassing teenagers. That's one of the joys of getting old. You get to harass teenagers. And I harass teenagers, especially when I see them wearing the jeans, the jeans that have all the tears all over them. I'll go up to them and I'll put my arms around them and I'll say, I'm so sorry. I am so sorry. Your parents must be going through a hard time. And we're going to take up an offering for you, because I notice you'll be digging through the trash for your clothes, and I'm so sorry. And they go, huh? What? And I go, look at your jeans. Did you get those out of the trash? Father, they cost me a lot of money. I'm going, oh, so the more torn up they are, the more they cost. Yeah. Now, does that make sense? The more it's torn up. But you know what it is? They live in a bubble. And the bubble is called cool. And you know what cool is? Cool is millions of people looking at the same thing and desiring it, even though it may be trash. Because when two people desire something, then the third looks at them and they'll go, boy, there must be something desirable about that. So I'll desire it too, because they copy them. And if you have three people, holy God, there must be really desirable. And when you get 1,000 people, you have fashion. Okay? It could look ugly as sin, but everybody has gotten into desiring it because they copied one another. And so why am I talking about this? Because you live in a bubble, whether you know it or not. Now, what does this have to do with the gospel? Look at what has happened in the gospel. A man is born blind. And Jesus tells him to go puts mud on his eyes and then go wash. And the man can see. Now, he's been born blind. When he goes to the Pharisees, who live in their own bubble, it's a different bubble than we live in. And so we can see their bubble easy. And you can look at their bubble and say, how could they have interpreted reality that way? Because that was their bubble. We live in ours. And so they say, who healed you? And the man says, it was this man named Jesus. And do you notice how they reject, how they decide not to allow anything to change the way they see reality? Here Jesus has taken a man blind from birth and given him sight. And what do they say? Not, oh my God, that's amazing. How can he control reality that way? How? And some of them say it actually, but a lot of them say, this man cannot be from God. Why? Because he heals on the Sabbath. The bubble. They have interpreted reality in a particular way, and they choose that interpretation, even though it flies in the face of logic. A man stands, Jesus stands before a grave of a guy who's been buried 3 days, Lazarus. And he says to Lazarus, come out. The guy steps out of the tomb. And what do the Pharisees say? Well, it must be by the power of demons that he's doing that. The bubble. They are so safe in their bubble that they refuse to see reality, even if it slaps them in the face. Now, we might say, yeah, but I would never do that. The heck you wouldn't. The heck you would. You would. Because you're so accustomed to the culture. See, the Catholic Church has this teaching that I think is really important. It's called the sin at the origin. The sin at the origin. Some of you may know it as original sin. It's the same thing. It's not a sin that you committed. The sin at the origin is just saying, we don't know exactly what happened. We don't. Historically, we don't know exactly what happened. Adam and Eve is a story that's telling us the meaning of what's happened. But we don't know exactly what happened historically. But somehow we know that a choice was made somewhere in the ancient world and that humanity chose to separate itself from God and to interpret reality in a totally different way, a way that said, God, you may have created us, but we're going to do this on our own. And that's, and what has happened is that all of us who are sons and daughters of whoever was back there are born with a spiritually genetic disease. And that means that our internal programming is all screwed up. Our internal programming, it's like working on a computer that has been infected. You don't get reality. It's the system is all messed up. And that's who we are. And the only reason we think we're normal is that we're all screwed up in the same way. And so we look at each other and we say, yeah, you're normal. Yep, you're screwed up too. But we don't call it screwed up. We call it reality. And what happens is someone comes into our lives, into this world, who is God. And God comes in, takes a human nature and said, remember that old saying, if you want something done right, you do it yourself. And so what happens is Jesus is God appearing in front of us saying, this is what I meant when I created you. This is what I meant on how to be a human being. He is the only really normal person that has ever existed. And that's why we are Christians. Because what we're doing is trying to see the world and imitate so that we can get back to the original intent of God. So that we can see the world the way He intended us to see it. Because we've become so old that we're so affixed with the ways of the world and seeing the ways of the world. And what He's asking us is to let go of some of the hardness of that interpretation and become younger and trust Him and help, ask Him to help you see the world from His perspective. That's what it means to be a Christian. Learning to see the world the way God sees the world. It's not about going to church. Yes, come to church because this is where you get to learn. This is where you get to allow God's Spirit to transform the inner eye. And so today, in a minute now, we're going to do something called scrutinies. Now, the Catholic Church has all kinds of words that I think are dumb, with all due respect. But the word scrutiny, when we do scrutiny, you always think of to scrutinize somebody is pretty bad, right? And all that it is that a group of young people or older people are moving towards the sacrament of baptism. And we are, remember, Easter Sunday is the time when we will baptize younger adults. And the scrutiny is actually a prayer asking God to liberate these young men and women as they move towards baptism. Asking God to take the blinders off of their eyes. Not the eyes of their body, but the blinders from the interpretation of life. And help them to see life from the perspective of Jesus. From the perspective of God. And so it's an asking, and sometimes it's even called an exorcism. But please, we have such negative notions about that. Not that we shouldn't, but I'm not casting out, you know, we're not going back to The Exorcist or something. What the church is saying, that the power of evil has cast down an illusion over all of humankind. Remember when Jesus gets taken up to the mountain and Satan says, "See all these kingdoms? They're all mine." You know why? Because he has blinded us. He has blinded us. And Jesus is the one that comes to lift the veil of Satan so that we can see the world in the right perspective. And that's what the church is asking. That these young men and women, that God, through their baptism, begin, because it's a process, to lift the veil so that they can begin to see life from the correct perspective, the perspective of Jesus Christ. And so that is a process, by the way, that's not only we're praying for them, but every single person in this congregation, all of us, are at least half blind. Okay? We are all screwed up. And what we're asking God is, lift the veil. Help us to see life the way that it really is, and not in the illusion that is created by our infected culture.